Soprano Renee Fleming is one of the most illustrious stars in the opera world today. She sings at great houses all over the world, including the Met. She's won 3 Grammy Awards, the most recent one for her 2009 album of Verismo arias. Her latest album, Dark Hope, gives new meaning to the word departure. Instead of Puccini and Mascagni, this CD includes songs from Jefferson Airplane and Leonard Cohen and Death Cab for Cutie.
I want to live where soul meets body and let the sun wrap its arms around me and bathe my skin in water cool and cleansing and feel.
Renee Fleming is here to talk about that and her more operatic pursuits, or maybe making this album had its operatic elements. Welcome to WQXR.
Thank you.
So, was it fun making a recording this different?
You know, it was fun because it felt like an adventure, forging new territory. I'm so used to controlling every aspect of a recording project, which comes organically from my musical interests. And this came so much out of left field with such a kind of shock that I was delighted in a way to enter into something completely new.
What were the challenges involved in doing it?
Well, there were many challenges. I mean, one, I had to familiarize myself to some degree with the music. Secondly, then I had to figure out, I mean, I had a sense of what voice would work. And so I knew that anything above a certain pitch would begin to sound like opera, would begin to sound like my classical voice. So, but then I had to learn the style.
You've been shying away from the C word, but to me, crossover just means an artist crosses over to a different discipline. And if you're not successful, it can sound kind of silly. But if you are successful, like Eileen Farrell, it really works. And I would argue that Dark Hope is a crossover album in the best sense of the word.
Oh, thank you. I think there are two definitions of crossover. In one respect, it's what you said, is that someone is leaving their genre and crossing over to another genre. But the primary use of the word now today, which was not mentioned at all in the New York Times, is in reference to an entirely separate genre of music, which includes and started with Andrea Bocelli. And then in our country, it's gone to Il Divo and Josh Groban. And in the UK, where it's most successful, and you have Catherine Jenkins, Charlotte Church, Sarah Brightman, these are very successful performers who sing in a classical style with a classical production of singing, but they sing pop music. And so that's what I'm trying to say when I'm saying this isn't crossovers. I'm saying it's not that. And it's not also, again, me sounding like an opera singer singing rock music.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fourth, the major lift, the barefoot king composing, hallelujah, hallelujah.
Now, you mentioned that you had recorded this while you were singing Rosenkavalier at the Met, and I actually saw that in an interview that you did online, or I saw the interview online that you did on German television in beautiful German, I might add.
Oh, thank you.
I was extremely impressed. And you really recorded, you were singing Rosenkavalier by night and recording this by day?
Yes, exactly. And the two things, actually, I'm not sure I would have wanted to do that during Armida performances, because Armida is the most virtuosic Olympian role in my repertoire. But Rosenkavalier fit very nicely in with this. It was really kind of a wonderful test also, because I didn't want in any sense to ever feel that anything in this was uncomfortable vocally. And really, it's not, because I'm singing where I speak, which is I speak in a low register, and it just sort of was very natural extension of speech, whereas my singing, classical, is there's nothing natural about it. It's highly artificial and a lot of work and discipline to achieve.
You sang your first complete Wolves and Cavalier at the Met in 2000, along with Susan Graham as Octavian. And then the two of you did it again about a decade later this past season. How did it feel different? Did it feel different?
Oh, this role is a role that we can grow up in. Every time I sing the Marshal, and I have to say, not every time, but I did put her away for about 8 years while I stuck with Manon and Traviata and some of the really higher, more florid parts, because I knew that I could come back to the Marshal and would want to come back and have this be a role that I revisit often in later part of my career, because it's low. And she does change with maturation. And for instance, one of the things I noticed this time is I had the heartbreak of it 10 years ago, but this time I brought authority to it. I had a greater understanding of her position, of her stature within the society that she lives. And that helped me a lot. That helped me stay still when everything around her is bustling. And that's the beauty of really singing an opera, is you come back to something a few years later and you can layer it with either differently or deeper or in some other way. Your colleagues inform you, the conductor, certainly the production, and it's never dull.
Has your vocal growth since the very beginning, from singing Mozart to singing Strauss and Verdi and now Jefferson Airplane, surprised you?
No, not really surprised me. I think we don't really know how the voice is going to change. And so it's more a wait and see kind of a situation. I'm not a person who tends to plan for the unknown. You know, it's better than you're not disappointed or surprised in a way that you didn't expect. But I mean, Mozart was certainly one of my voice teachers. I had 10 years of singing solidly, almost Mozart roles in repertoire, and then I moved into Strauss, and Strauss is now the touchstone composer for me. But while all the singing Slavic repertoire and French repertoire, and of course American and premieres, which I love, so it's been varied. Bel canto, 9 bel canto roles, Handel. I'm not really a specialist, with now I would say the exception of Strauss. But my voice hasn't really changed that much. Some people's voices get heavier. They can sing, move into more dramatic repertoire. My voice has pretty much stayed the same. If anything, it went up and got lighter, enabling me in 10 years ago to start singing Traviata and Manon, which I couldn't sing early on in my career. So that was that was a little bit of a surprise, I think.
Your two daughters and your sister both sing on the Dark Hope album, and both your parents were voice teachers, so singing really runs in the family. Was there ever a time when you rebelled against being a singer and said, no, I'm not going to go into the family business?
I think I always felt that way. I had no desire to become a singer. It wasn't in my nature to be a performer. I was not a natural performer at all. In fact, I enjoy it now, but it took a long, long time and a lot of effort to find really the joy in performing. So I was interested in writing music. I wanted to be, I loved animals. I wanted to be first lady president for a while. You know, when you're young, you just dream big. I mean, the sky's the limit. And it's not really until later, once you've worked at something, that you realize, this might not be so easy. And I just eventually, I think I fell into it through circumstance more than anything. And I've been kind of interested to find out that my children are also talented. And I have not pushed them at all. I really, my philosophy as a parent has been to kind of provide them with experience and anything they wanted to explore. If I could help them to explore it, I have. And they still love to sing.
Well, Renee Fleming, thank you so much for making time to come to WQXR.
Thank you.